All right, welcome to Extroverted Developer number 10.
Number 10.
Yay, today we have a special guest, Toby.
Hi.
I can't pronounce your last name.
I just learned it yesterday. It's Mora Shanu with nine
L's. Mora Shanu. Right. Oh, yes. Thank you. I don't think I've ever heard anybody say your last name since we've met.
Yeah, it's for a reason. It's very difficult.
I actually, I like the email address that I have for you, hard to spell.
That's Toby.hardtospell at gmail.com.
Yeah.
If you want to email me.
Nice.
Yes.
And you're a stand-up comic now.
I am. I am a former computer scientist, or, well, I was a SDET at Microsoft, a design engineer in test, and then a program manager at Microsoft, and then I became a stand-up comic.
Yeah. Nice. And that's your full-time gig?
Yeah. I've been freelancing on the side for a little bit, but it's winding down, and now it's more just kind of the residual stuff that I have to get over with. And
yeah.
So I can focus on it full time.
Do you miss it, or does freelancing kind of, you know, keep the programming, you know, engineering bug kind of?
Well, there are some, like, kind of fun passion projects I do. Like, I wrote an app that helps comedians run shows and stuff like that. So I get a little bit out of it that way.
What's that app called?
It's called The Light.
The Light?
Comedy show Light and Timer. It's actually not live right now. I took it down. I have to make some bug fixes.
Oh, for the new iOS updates.
Yeah, yeah.
Just haven't been keeping up.
Yeah. So, it's funny because it's one of those things where I published and I was excited about it and everyone liked it. And then I never heard anyone give me any feedback. I was like, oh, that was a waste of time. And, of course, as soon as it breaks, I get all these emails like, hey, why doesn't your app work anymore? What are you doing? So, yeah.
Makes sense. So let's go sort of step by step in your computer career. You went to college and got a degree in computer science.
Yeah.
From Brown?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Computer science and psychology.
Computer science and psychology.
Yeah.
Oh, part I didn't know.
Yeah.
I was going to ask, does that mean you always knew you wanted to get into computers? But it sounds like you always knew you wanted to get into computers and always had a second career in mind.
I guess so. I mean, I've always been kind of, you know, I always wanted to have my fingers in various pots. When I grew up, I always loved comedy. I was always drawn to it. It was the movies that I wanted to watch. It was the books I wanted to read were humor books. And at the same time, I was always stuck in front of the computer trying to learn anything I could about coding. And then also, you know, I guess I always had this latent curiosity in, you know, the human mind and how people think.
Right.
And when I got to college, I started doing anything I could related to comedy. I majored in computer science, which was a foregone conclusion. I knew I wanted to do... Well, actually, I shouldn't say that, because I started as a computer engineer, thinking I might want to do hardware stuff, and then eventually went into computer science, and then also majored in psychology. And I thought I would get a master's or maybe go into psych research, because it fascinated me, and then I started, and it turns out it's incredibly boring. I can't read academic papers without falling asleep, and... I did a research project, and I was all excited, and I was like, well, we could study this or this, and the professor was like, oh, those are all great ideas, but here's what I think you should do, which turned into sit in the basement and analyze data from 20 years ago that doesn't really pan out, and maybe see if we can tease out some conclusion from it, and it was not very satisfying.
So. Yeah, everybody works, you know?
Yeah.
My definition of work is... even when you're doing something you love, there's something about that you don't want to do, but you do it because you need the money.
Right.
Yeah.
Right? And so even if I'm sure this has happened to you as a stand-up comic, you love doing stand-up comedy, but maybe you don't love doing it every single night.
Yeah.
Right? And so those nights you do it because you need the money, that's work.
Yeah. That's totally true. I mean, and it's also, well, one, especially with comedy, it takes a lot of work ethic. It's very easy to be lazy as a stand-up comedian and not write new jokes and just do the clubs. You know, I mean, it's not easy to be... You're not going to get paid very much. It's not very lucrative to do that. But
and you might not realize that your career is starting to suck until suddenly it falls off a cliff, right? Like, everyone's
reading
material, or, like, people start to not invite you back to the clubs or whatever.
Exactly, right? Yeah.
And then one day you're like, wait, why haven't I gotten any gigs in a month? And then you're like, oh... Because I was lazy.
Yeah, because you don't make the investment up front. Yeah, there's also, like, you know, it's not just the writing, it's also the driving to the gigs. It's also having the discipline to videotape your sets and watch your sets after you do them, even though it's late and you don't want to.
What's the furthest you've traveled to a...
South Africa.
Oh, okay.
All the drive.
Nice.
So you knew you wanted to go into computer science. You thought about the psychology thing was very interesting, which to me it still is, but that I'm more of a behavioral economics, I think, is very interesting, but that might not have been around when you were in school. It wasn't around when I was in school.
Well, I guess I can say I didn't really study it. And I'll also say I'm still interested in psychology. It's just the, you know, when you go behind the scenes and you realize all of the massive time and work, that the investment that's necessary to get this potential conclusion to an interesting question. Part of the appeal of computer science in contrast to that was that just that you could build something and see it and work with it and make it happen. And you didn't have to, you know, have all this fuzzy.
Yeah, it seems like you can have a career in computer science from a bachelor degree, but not so much psychology.
That's also true, yeah.
Yeah.
And psychology and sociology are two of those disciplines that people go into not necessarily hoping to ever work in those fields, but partially just out of an interest, a kind of an academic desire to know more about it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but you never saw yourself being a psychologist?
No, not like a clinical psychologist. Right. It was always going to be research.
So you did you go to Microsoft straight after college?
I interned there while I was in college, and then I got a full-time offer and went back to the same team.
So you were an SDET intern and then got SDET full-time?
Yes.
Okay. How long were you SDET? So for those people who don't know, SDET stands for Software Development Engineer and Test. Mm-hmm. They're computer programmers that work at Microsoft, but they focus on sort of test automation and quality assurance in an automated way. So they're computer programmers mm-hmm. who do quality assurance, not manual testing.
Well, I actually did a fair amount of manual testing.
Oh, did
as well.
You? Our team did not.
it really varies across the company. And I worked on firmware, a device firmware. Which
that's right, because you were in PC3.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
So it was a bit harder to automate. And I automated some parts of it, but they ended up... When you're dealing with hardware, a lot of the problems were hardware related, and it was kind of out of our hands, so it was a lot of just banging on it until it broke.
That's funny. So you started in computer engineering as your degree, thinking you wanted to do something with hardware. You were like, no way am I going to do something with hardware.
Yeah.
And then you get hired at Microsoft, and you're working on hardware.
Yeah, that's true.
I sort of did the exact opposite. I got a computer engineering degree because I didn't care that much about languages. Like, computer science at my school, very heavily focused on languages, like making your own language compilers and stuff like that. And I was like, I already know how to program. I want to learn about the hardware.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went to Microsoft and worked on Visual Basic. And I was like, oh, sad. So that wasn't satisfying for you to become to be an SDET? You wanted to get into this PM role?
You know, I liked being a SDET. I always called it SDET, but I guess tomato, tomato.
Oh, SDET, yeah.
You know, and I liked it. I was good at it. I've always had a knack for breaking things, it turns out. But I guess what it was at Microsoft, there was kind of a limited career path as an SDET. Because
not a lot of 64 SDETs.
Yeah, you could only advance, and that's Microsoft terminology as well. You start off at kind of like a 5960 level, and then you go up to maybe like, you know, 60, 61, 62, 63. And it's like kind of a progressive promotional system they have. But you can only get so good, I guess, mm-hmm. at being an SDET. And you can become an SDET manager, or a test manager, it's called, but I just wasn't really interested in that. And I was publishing kind of like, you know, vision papers like for Think Week and stuff like that. I would publish stuff or contribute to other people. So the management.
Did Bill ever comment on your Think Week papers?
I don't think he ever did.
No.
It was never, because there's also this, it's not like you just send it to Bill's desk.
No, you just put them all on the site and he decides to comment or not.
And a lot of it's also done through your boss and your boss's boss.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was kind of... it was kind of like management kind of guided me into the PM role. And so I was an SDET for like a year and something, and then a PM for a year and something.
Okay.
Yeah. It may have been a long answer to a short question.
No, that's fine. But then ultimately, even the PM role, not so much. You're like, I'm doing, because you were doing stand-up comedy at nights after Microsoft. And that when I met you, you were already a professional comic.
Yeah. Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So in Seattle.
This is all happening in Redmond, Seattle area, Kirkland.
Well, no, then I must not have been, because I wasn't... It depends, you know, the term professional comedian is a little bit loose, because it, you know,
this is something that Jim and I have been discussing recently, actually, like what makes, well, like at what point can you say that you're a professional, or can you say that you're like, you got paid once to do it? Does that mean you're a professional? Right?
Totally.
I get paid once a week, but I can't make ends meet. Does that mean I'm a professional?
Yeah. And people always ask you that. They're like, right. Oh, so this is what you do? And I'm like, yeah, it's what I do. And they're like, oh, wow, it's amazing. And I'm like, I eat a lot of rice.
And yet it's worth it. No thoughts of going back to the computer programming stuff?
I mean, no. I mean, I just, to be honest, I don't have the patience for it. I mean,
for computer programming?
Yeah, I like generating ideas, but then, you know, that's 5% of the job, and the rest is making it happen and debugging and everything. And I guess, you know, for better or for worse, I just don't have the discipline and the attention span to juggle that effectively with all these other things that I want to do that are much more, you know, you write a joke, you get to tell the joke, it's published, you know. I write a script, it's done, it's out there, you know. I like that. And so that's kind of drawn me away.
So it was an issue of happiness or a fun, essentially, that made you kind of make the switch to full-time?
Yeah, and just doing what, almost on an individual project basis. So it was like, well, I want to write these scripts with this person, and I want to travel and do the road and do these shows. Right. And
there just wasn't enough time in the day.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that, I mean, I still like programming. Like when I get into it and I get, right. You know, it's, I'm like, I've wrapped my head around this program, and you know, I do enjoy that and learning new technologies, but
it doesn't sound like you miss the desk work.
No.
Yeah, I like programming too. It's the only time I'm unhappy with programming is when I'm implementing other people's ideas,
mm-hmm.
right, and not my own. But that's most of computer programming is not implementing your own ideas. And so sometimes I wish that I could escape. I guess the dirty secret of computer programming is that we all have alternate careers in our heads. I know this is true for me. I'll confess that my alternative career, if I hadn't found out that I was good at computer programming, I probably would have gone to Broadway.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I probably would have gone singing and dancing. I'm a pretty good dancer. I can hold a tune. I just can't act. And so I'm like a two threat.
That's unbelievable. I never would have suspected.
Yeah, it's much in Seattle. There's not much of a place to show that. Right? Yeah. There's
not a lot of community theater opportunities. Or,
yeah, like, Microsoft is so big that they did have a small community theater that was just the Microsoft players or whatever.
Yeah,
and they had singing and stuff like that, but there wasn't not like New York City, right? Mm-hmm. Where there's Broadway people at karaoke. And then there's tons and tons of dance classes and dancing and things. And so I ballroom dance still, and I sing still here.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my alternate. Ben, do you have an alternate?
I don't know. I guess my alternate was what I went to school for. I was a art director and graphic designer for a long time, and so that was sort of, I don't know. But I was a programmer first. I was a programmer since I was very young, and I really enjoyed that. And eventually one of my internships was what really turned me off of computer science. I wrote device drivers for a company for a while, and just got very tired.
That'll burn you out.
Yeah, it was all the kind of theoretical work.
Mm-hmm.
And now that I moved into front end development, the path seems clear, right? I went into web design, and then I went into art direction for a technology company that made video slots, made games, and kind of eventually got pulled back into programming from there, but it was all front end programming. It was all, you know, I can see what I'm doing, I can touch it, I work with the, you know, the visual and interactive parts of things. If everything I was doing was theory and working with, like, I was programming satellites that I couldn't see, and we'd have to like build something and, you know, assemble it into a batch and then push it off, and then a week later you'd get back a report, right? And that was your debugging, essentially. And I just couldn't handle that.
Like,
even
as
an intern, it was excruciating, and I wasn't even doing anything particularly important. I was, you know, I was an intern, right? So, but still, I was like, okay, this is not. If this is what this is like, then this really sucks. And eventually, you know, I did that for like 2 years, and then eventually changed majors to and got an art degree, but and just kept the computer science minor. But yeah, I mean, I had to write compilers and I had to do all that. So, but I didn't really enjoy that. And it wasn't until I got back into it from the visual interactive side that I was like, oh, wow, this is really fun. Like, JavaScript's cool.
That's so funny. I know so many programmers who are exactly the opposite. They're like, this is the interesting part, and I guess we'll throw some UI on top. That's right. That's easy, yeah. Right? And they have no idea how hard it is to write UI. And what they really are, they'd be jealous of you that you got to write a compiler.
Or how easy it is to write bad UI and not know it. That's the biggest problem, right? I think the biggest issue with UI is that people, everyone thinks they can do it, and then they write it, and they're like, what? This totally makes sense. This is great. What do you mean no one likes my, you know, app?
I have seen some really crappy UIs on iPhone applications,
yeah.
And we were super scared here at CityMaps about our iPhone application getting rejected for whatever reason. I was like, guys, there's so much crap in the store. They really freaked out about it.
Yeah.
So, do you feel like your degree was wasted because you're not doing anything with it now?
Oh, well, no. For one thing, I do, you know, a little bit of tech stuff. I mean, my own projects, you know, I help out on podcasts and things. So, you know, it helps to have a technical background. I still fix my mom's computer a lot. I'm still roped in that. No, but I was interested in it and I loved it. And, you know, while I was in college and everything, and then, you know, I had a good time at Microsoft, enjoyed my experience there. I eventually kind of got a little burned out, but, and also the money I made there helped subsidize my transition for one thing.
Are there mental models or like ways of thinking that you feel transition well between programming, engineering, and
I absolutely do. And I think, I mean, it's not universal to all stand-up comics, but very much, especially when I was a test engineer, like, it's all about finding the flaws in software, you know, testing the seams, the edge cases, and everything like that. And that's very much how I approach joke writing as well.
Okay. You fix bugs in your jokes?
Yes, I try to. I tackle an issue, and I try to, you know, like a political issue, and I'll try to find the cracks in people's arguments for it, and then expand those into the most dramatic possible conclusions, like, you know, like you do when you're filing a bug report. Just trying to break the premise of...
Can I ask you, because I'm not familiar with your comedy. When Jim introduced me to you, and I followed you on Twitter and stuff, and which is hilarious, by the way. But what kind of comedy, what do you consider your style, I guess?
It's pretty racist. Yeah, a lot of homophobia, some watermelons. it's, I feel like, you know, it's always awkward talking about yourself, you know, like, I feel like I don't want to be a publicist for myself or something like that, but people always say it's, thoughtful and, you know, it's kind of intelligent, I guess. That's what people describe it as. I feel like a dick just saying it, but it's like, you know, I write about what's most interesting to me, and what's most interesting to me is stuff that's serious. You know, I talk about psychology in my act, you know, and like, you know, just different cases where I run into behaviors that are, you know, indicative of variable reinforcement or cognitive dissonance and things, and I'll talk about.
Do you ever joke about engineering or computers?
I do. I have a few.
Plenty of
this field is wide open.
Yes.
Rife with comic comedic.
It's true.
So far dominated by Dilbert, I think you can do better.
Yeah. It's been a long run for Dilbert.
I don't think Scott Adams would work as a stand-up.
It only works in cell animation. Besides stand-up comedy, do you do writing for comedy in other formats, either show scripts or things like that?
Yeah, I write sketches. I write sketches and monologue for Top Story Weekly, which is a sketch show at I.O. Improv Olympic in Los Angeles. I've written stuff for MSN and, you know, various like little pilots and sketch comedy things.
Yeah. Okay, cool. I'm not sure what else to ask. I'm a bad interviewer.
Ah, it's fine. I like the way you were asking me to talk about myself. That was my pleasure.
Is it annoying? Is it annoying as a comic when someone asks you to be funny on, like, on command?
Oh, they find out you're a comic? Yeah.
They're like, oh, say something funny. Say something funny to my kids.
Constantly. Constantly. Nice. Oh, can you tell me a joke? And they're like, or give me your act. And they're like, I'm not going to do my act.
Heard
you know, it's
joke,
like,
yeah.
Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Like, heard any good jokes lately? No any good jokes.
Well, I've sort of rolled with that. I have like one or two go-tos that I've told a billion and a half times.
Seems like you'd have to know like a few jokes you can just tell like off the cuff. I don't know.
It's easier because you just feel like such a stick in the mud when people are like, do your act, and you're like, nah, sorry, I'm not going to, and they're just so disappointed, you know? And so you have to have like one or two.
Does doing stand-up comedy like open doors to writing or to other kinds of, like, you find people coming up to you and like, you know, we need a writer for this, you know, new TV pilot or something?
Not really.
They will after this podcast.
That's why I did it, you know. You know, I mean, there's that image of the old days where you go to a spot at a comedy club and, you know, this agent approaches you and they're like, you got what it takes, kid. And
work on the Daily Show.
We're going to Hollywood, buy a plane ticket, you know. Yeah, but what really happens is it's a lot of, if you know friends, you know, I have friends who are like, we want to film this and do this project, come help us write it, or let's write a pilot together. And it's more organic. And increasingly the industry is cherry picking stuff that's popular on YouTube or popular on Twitter because they just see it as a way to, hey, why would we take a risk on something?
When let the crowd decide.
Exactly. Have a built-in audience, etc.
Because of that, are you doing more things with social media? Your Twitter feed is funny, so everybody should follow you on Twitter.
Yes. / Toby Morishanu. Good luck.
You know what's funny is I actually, I typed
your name. Yeah, we won't put that in the show notes or anything. You'll have to figure out how to spell
it. The power of the Google search engine. I typed your name phonetically. I butchered it, by the way, into Google, and it said, did you mean Tony? And I had your name spelled right.
Are you kidding me? I am honored. I did not know that there are enough people searching for me. It's probably just me.
Spelling your name wrong constantly. Drunk at 3 in the morning. Why don't you love me?
I forgot what the question was.
Nah. I don't know. Let's talk about Google being evil.
Okay, yeah, sure.
I feel like this is first of all, it's a Gizmodo article that we put in the show notes. We'll put this in the show notes. But I feel like this is something, this is like the slow news day article of our, in tech, right? In tech, this is just, you know, did Google finally become evil? They've been making these articles since like 2003.
Totally.
You know, and because Google invites the question with their motto,
don't be evil.
Don't be evil. Then everyone is like, oh, what is evil? Have they finally become evil? Is this evil?
And yes.
It's true, because Yahoo has been evil by their standard for years.
Right. But no one's ever like, oh, is Yahoo finally evil? I guess Microsoft was, you know, evil for a long time. The name was spelled with a dollar sign. This is back when I was a teenager.
It seems like that, when you get down to the core of it, evil equals money. Like, do they make a ton of money, and do they push out other competition from the marketplace? Then they are evil, right? Because they're preventing me from getting any of the money. Right.
Right.
That's what it comes to. That's what people mean when they're saying Microsoft is evil.
But Google's been making money hand over fist for years and years. But granted, people have been
saying in the last 18 months, they have really. So I've noticed a couple things. I've noticed that their software, their site is not as fast as it used to be, for sure. I don't know why that is. Huh. And then a lot of their software releases, like I was down in Florida. And I was like, oh, man, we're covered. We've got, like, an iPhone and an Android and then an iPad. And, like, we'll be able to find it to Disney World, right? Like, of all places, we're trying to go to Disney World. Something happened right as we were driving to Disney World where all of Google Maps shut down for probably 2 hours.
Really?
Yeah. Couldn't do anything. Android phone uses Google Maps. The iPad uses Google Maps. It didn't matter that I had internet connection. None of the mapping software would work. And so we just did it the old-fashioned way. We read signs. Luckily, we were already on the highway.
And luckily, you were going to Disney World.
World and not grandma's house. But yeah, we couldn't get anywhere. And it just shut down. And I'm like,
why don't you use a different map site or a map?
I did eventually get something else working. Okay. I think
Bing Maps, I've used that app for directions.
They didn't have an app at this point.
Yeah.
I forget why. I tried like MapQuest or some other thing, and it just wasn't working. I forget. Eventually, I did get the Sprint built-in navigation software to give me a remote.
You were in the GPS Bermuda Triangle for a minute there.
Right. The problem was that we had all these devices with GPS, but not the software. Like, no local software.
Right.
Sad.
It hasn't been my experience that Google has gotten slower recently. It seems like, if anything, they're pushing faster and faster. I think there's been this transition, though, with Google Plus and things, where they're trying to bring every aspect of their software toward one kind of core search social thing.
Right. And they polluted their search results with their brands, right? Their properties.
Well, Yahoo's been doing that forever.
They have. Mm-hmm. We never expected Google to do it with search. Right? Search was sort of their core thing.
Right.
So it's not indicated that it's...
Well, it is. It's search plus your world, right? There's search and then the results from your Google Plus friends, which you can turn off, by the way. Yeah. But it is defaulted to on, which I don't necessarily agree with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You see searches, you see anything that's relevant to your friends, basically.
Right.
If you don't have a Google Plus account, does it show that?
I don't think so, no.
You don't think it would show an article from Google Plus before it showed an article from Twitter?
I don't think so, no.
If you didn't have a Google Plus account.
Right, I'm saying somebody else's Google Plus. Mm-hmm. Like, if somebody made a post on Google Plus and they wrote the same post on Twitter, which one would show up first?
I do Google searches a lot from my CityMaps Google account. We use Google Apps, and so I'm logged in as CityMaps usually, which means my user isn't my Google Plus user. I don't have a CityMaps Google Plus user.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
I get great results that aren't polluted at all by... Now, I'm sure they'd be using that. It'd be wrong if they didn't use that information to inform search results. Somehow, they just shouldn't play favorites.
Yeah, I guess the question that comes down to is, are we just worried about privacy too much?
Right?
Like, does it even matter these days, privacy? Like, am I just being an old curmudgeon? Like, get off my lawn, you kids, with your privacy and your sharing.
Well, a lot of the thing is, privacy seems to be something that tech people get up in arms about. But there's a lot of people who don't care, and people generally are not willing to pay for it. Like, if Google said for $2 a year, we won't use any of your information to make any money off of, because we're only going to make $2 a year off of you anyway, say. People probably still wouldn't do it, because they just don't really care when it comes
to... Like, how much are you paying to not see ads on Google? Yeah. I don't think most people would.
This is something that computer programmers are notoriously bad at recognizing, is that computer programmers are not like everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite example is of a college professor asks his class of computer programmers, how many of you drive or would like to drive stick shift? And 2/3 of them raise their hand. Right? 90% of automobiles sold are automatic.
Mm-hmm.
Right? The fact that 60% or 66% of computer programmers would rather have more control is just not indicative at all of what the regular population wants. What the regular population wants is for their car to go from A to B. Mm-hmm. And they don't care about having this fine level of control over the gear shift ratios and over the gas mileage and all of that stuff. Computer programmers freaks.
I think if you asked a group of men between 18 and 35, would you rather drive a stick shift or automatic, you'd get about the same ratio, right? I think it would still be in the 2/3.
I'd be curious to do that. Let's put the poll in our podcast and see if anybody does.
Because that's our audience. Yay! But it seems like that might have been a flawed, a biased question based on who was in that class. More so than
computer, I see what you're saying.
Right? But still, no. But I agree that engineers in general are bad at doing that. But privacy is enough of an issue that it's not just among computer scientists. Because this is something that's shifting the national discussion and politics and everything. So if it was just computer programmers, Congress doesn't care enough about engineers specifically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no engineer would get elected to Congress. They don't play well with others, and they're too logical. This is not.
Yeah.
But it's not like the president wouldn't be mentioning technology and privacy if it was just something that computer programmers cared about.
In fact, President Bartlet mentioned it on The West Wing in 1999.
I'm so glad that you're watching The West Wing.
Have you watched The West Wing?
Once or twice.
Really? I just started like last week for the first time. I got through all of season one and I'm just finishing season two today. Yeah. And I'm amazed at how relevant it still is.
Really?
Yeah. In fact, they talked about privacy in the internet, and this was like a 1999 episode.
Wow.
Where they're like, it matters who goes on the Supreme Court, because this next 20-year cycle of the Supreme Court is all about privacy in the internet. And I'm like... For those at home, I just made like a shocked face. But anyway, the reason Google is evil is the same reason that any company becomes evil. It's because new employees didn't get rich. They didn't get in on the pre-IPO stock price, and they're now joining the company. And they're trying to find, they're just graduated from college, they've got student loans, and they're now trying to find ways to get the bonus. No one gets rich off their salary, right? They get rich off of stock bonuses and stock options and just, I mean, here's $5 million, right? Like somebody just gives you a ton of money and that's how you get rich. Not because you're making six figures a year and then you save to become rich.
You live comfortably, but you don't become rich.
Right. You live off your salary. And so these people are trying to get those giant bonuses by doing something to make Google even more profitable, right? So either they've gotten paid in shares and they need those share prices to go up in order for them to get rich. Or something. And so they start finding all of these different ways to squeeze additional money out, like map pricing, right? The new licensing for map pricing. Or the fact that Google's going to start charging for App Engine. They haven't started, as far as I know yet, but they're going
to
start
charging for maps yet.
Right? We had all this free stuff from Google that was supposed to be powered by advertising, but that's not working out. And somebody who didn't get rich in the initial
The users aren't paying. It's the...
Right.
It's people who want to use their APIs and things like that, which, I mean, granted, applies to us here at Citymaps because we do use some of their products that way. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, advertising still does... no one pays to use Google products as a user.
Yeah. What's your relationship been with Google, Toby?
Well, I've developed for Android, and that was all right.
What did you write for Android?
I wrote a program called Ice Standard. Basically, I've written an iPhone version 2. It was done under contract from a nonprofit called About the Kids Foundation. And basically, it lets you put your emergency standard or your emergency contact and health information on your lock screen. So if someone finds your phone, and you're in an accident or something,
Something you couldn't do on the iPhone.
Oh, I did that. I just created a wallpaper image.
Oh, okay.
So you can save it to the iPhone. So it works out.
Okay. And the comedy app you were saying, the lights, was iPhone?
Yeah, that was just iPhone. Okay. I didn't write an Android version for that.
What's your since you've written apps for both? What's how do you compare the development processes?
It's quicker to. There's less bugs with Android because it's Java, so stuff doesn't just crash as easily. You don't have to worry about the memory management aspect, which is nice. At the same time, it's
flood of hate mail.
Yeah.
From our objective.
I wanted fans, not haters.
Well, that's all right. There's not going to be floods of anything.
But at the same time, it's a little bit tricky because with the iPhone, it's so nice to have everyone has an iPhone. With the Android, it's such a fractured market. They get people with bugs on these weird devices that you'd never considered.
And, error reporting for Android was ridiculous. I was like, only on this one version does Java not work correctly. It throws this type error. Yeah. And I'm like, what? I can't even reproduce this.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Sorry.
No, that's exactly the same experience I've had.
Was it easier to market the iPhone app? Or...
I mean, I guess a little bit easier because it's nice to have iTunes integrated with the App Store and everything like that. And, yeah, I mean, Apple makes the experience pretty good, I would say. There are a few hiccups. The signing process for Apple applications is really heinous, whereas in Android it's very easy. But, you know.
Google Play, by the way. What do you guys think of the Android market being renamed to Google Play?
Is it?
Yeah, there's no more Android market.
I didn't know about this.
Yeah, there's
is
no
there
more,
an article for that?
There is no more. Yeah, I'll post it in the show notes. But cool. It's not one article. It's thousands of people up in arms. Not necessarily up in arms, but like it's a big change.
To not be called the App Store.
Yeah, well, there's no more. The Android market is no more. Everything is under Google Play. And so Google Play is where you buy the music and the movies and now apps. So it's their version of the App Store.
Well, it's our version of iTunes.
It's their version of iTunes, yeah.
Right. I think that makes sense.
I guess it does.
On the one
it's
hand,
just a terrible name.
Microsoft has Zune, and they do the exact same thing, too. And they just seem to have had no... I don't know. I haven't seen the numbers in a long, long time. They just seem to have had no luck. Part of the problem, it could be, that they can't put our podcast into their podcast distribution system. I don't know why.
Google Play can't?
No.
Zune. Okay.
Yeah. Zune. I can't get into the Zune marketplace with this podcast, and I have no idea why.
Is there an approval system like Apple, or...?
There is. Please submit the link, and I've done this like 5 times, but then when you click submit, nothing happens. Nothing happens. You don't get an email saying that it was submitted. Mm-hmm. You don't get like anything. With Apple, when you submit a podcast, it's like going through approvals.
Yeah.
And then you get a whole like email status like, hey, your podcast has been approved. And they're like, all right. So sorry, friends at Microsoft who do listen to this, who have had to go to the website in order to listen because they can't get it on their Windows phone. Email Zune.
That's one thing I miss about working at Microsoft is that if something didn't work, I could just find out who was responsible. File a bug, email them. Yeah.
I filed a bug for Windows Mobile like when I was an intern at Microsoft. I was like, this bug is taking down networks everywhere. That was fun. It was a good bug.
Wow. That's a pretty serious bug for an intern.
Yeah. It turns out when you plugged in this particular Windows phone in with a new version of their sync software, it would just constantly hammer the way wireless networks work. The guys came over with all their equipment to test out this bug and get the repro. Is that it's all broadcast, right? And so when somebody wants to talk, they send a shut up message saying, hey, I'm about to talk. And then everybody else quiets down while you talk.
Oh, interesting.
So this thing would just send the shut up message 200 times a second. It would never say anything. It would just go shut up, shut up, shut up, shut up, shut up, shut up. And it would literally DDoS any network in the area.
Oh my God.
It would just kill your home
network. Yeah, so you just plug in your phone and suddenly networks within whatever the radius was of your phone.
If you could control that, that would be a very, very powerful tool for killing your local Starbucks.
You could kill
everybody
at Starbucks.
That's like Mission Impossible. Like,
You'd have to write it at the driver level, I think.
Right.
Yeah. I don't think you could do that from software.
I wrote an app that kills everything. Yeah.
Yeah, like TV be gone? Like Wi-Fi jammer?
One of the things I've been looking for lately for my phone is I really want to find an IR Blaster plug-in for Android or iOS or whatever. Right? They have a few of them, but none of them are great. It plugs into the audio port. Mm-hmm. It plugs into the audio jack. And then there's basically I just want a little thumb-shaped thing that I can plug into the audio jack, and then I download the app, and I can use it as a remote. And these things exist, but some of them exist as like a little dongle where you plug it into the audio jack, but then you also got this little thing on the table, and that's the actual IR Blaster, and I don't know. Yeah. This is what I want. I want to be able to have a universal remote where
I think
Griffin has
one. This exists. I know it does.
I'm sure it does. I just can't find something that's
the right thing.
Before you leave, is there anything else you want to plug?
My Twitter and stuff. You can just go to tobythecomic.com. It has videos, Twitter, Facebook. Also, the other podcast I help out on is My Picker's Broken, which is about people's worst relationship choices. They're interviewed by a relationship therapist and a comedian who are also an engaged couple.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll throw a little shout out to them. And
YouTube channel?
/ Toby Comedy.
Toby Comedy. Yeah. All right. Cool.
Perfect.
Awesome. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, dude.
Thank you.